across the UK and around the world on the internet by webcast and podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. And the show returns. Thank you very much for making the last month or so a record for the show. Lots of hits on the website and an awful lot of downloads of the show and a great deal of email. More email than we've ever had. Email arriving by the day with suggestions and guest ideas. Very good to get all of that. Please keep the emails coming in. You can email me via the website. www.theunexplained.tv is the address of the website. And there's a little link box there. Check that and you'll go straight to me. The feedback is very important. I would also ask you to do another thing. We're changing the format this month for the show on iTunes. You'll hear what it is when you get there. But whatever, if you're hearing the show on iTunes, always please come and just go to the website as well and check out what's there. It's very important to me. It gives me an idea of who's out there. And talking of that, well, I've been looking at the maps over the last, month or so. And the show is reaching places that it's never reached before. Little islands in the middle of the Pacific. Right across the United States, all the way up into Canada. Right across to China, Hong Kong and Taiwan we have now. We have Japan, New Zealand, Australia, and any country you name, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in Asia, whether almost all of Africa now covered, people are hearing the show. That is an indication that perhaps we're hitting the mark here. I don't know. You have to tell me that. But it's also an indication, of course, now of the power of the internet. These days, you can make a show like this, and you can reach people directly in a way that when I started my radio career 2 decades ago, we couldn't envisage that this was possible. All there was then, and I'm still interested in it now, as I know many of you are, was shortwave radio. That was the way, or maybe AM or medium wave radio, to reach vast numbers of people over long distances. Now that is not so. The rule book has been thrown right out of the window, and I think this year of 2008 is possibly the most exciting year. And I have said this in one of our radio magazines in the UK. The most exciting year because the technology that allows us to listen to radio is moving at a faster rate than ever. You know, more people are buying these Wi-Fi radios that allow you to listen to thousands, not just hundreds or scores of radio stations, but thousands of broadcasts and webcasts and radio stations from around the world. So this is the future. And what it means for people like me is it allows us to continue getting the message out there in a totally impartial, completely independent way. You know, this show, I've talked about the funding for it in the past, but this show is totally independent, completely impartial, and as it has been for quite a while, it is underfunded. Which brings me to another subject. We're going to have to change the way that we fund this show. I know I bang on about that all the time, but we really do because it isn't paying its way, and we need to find some kind of charging mechanism. Now, a lot of you with emails over the last month or so have suggested donations. That's a very good idea. We might do that, and I might be coming back to you, but thank you for your kindness. And generally, thank you for your kindness. Every single emails, and there have been a lot of emails over the last month, have been very kind, very thoughtful, above all, very supportive, but also ingenious with the ideas and suggestions. But it is interesting that one of the ideas and suggestions that came in was, why don't you contact again remote viewer Major Ed Dames, see what he's up to, because you left a few things hanging in the air when you talked to him a year ago. Now, synchronicity being what it is, you might call it coincidence, I don't know. I'm on the side of synchronicity here. But as I read that email, I had literally just sent an invitation to come onto the program to Major Ed Dames, which is why Major Ed Dames is about to be on the show now, and why I'm up here in the UK at a very early hour in the morning to talk to him in California, where he is now, late at night. But isn't it interesting that I got that email saying, come on, bring back Ed Dames, and I had just literally asked him to come on the show. Now, it might be coincidence, an idea like when the phone rings, you know who it is. That kind of thing, I don't know. Which ties into remote viewing, because remote viewing is tapping into the global unconscious and seeing what people are up to, wherever they might be. Major Ed Dames, if you've never come across him before, is one of the most controversial people, not only on The Unexplained, but on any of the media platforms that he's appeared on around the world, notably the big radio shows in the United States. People either love him and what he says, or they hate and discredit him. But whatever they do, and this is interesting, it's a phenomenon you find with a lot of broadcasters like Howard Stern in the United States. Even the ones who don't like him listen to what he's got to say. Now that is a rare gift and a special power. I've done radio for years, and let me tell you, that is special. That means that the man has impact. If the people who don't like him still have to listen to him, he's got something. Now, what else have we got to say? Thank you for the emails. As I say, we're going to change the way that we do the show. There's been some changes to iTunes. We covered those bases, so you'll hear what the changes are, and I hope you respond to them. Please keep the emails coming in. Thank you to Graham Mullins, my webmaster, who's kept this going on a volunteer basis for 2 years now that we started this idea, this concept. When the show came off the radio, we decided to put it back online. So, Graham, thank you for your assistance. Martin, who's doing some work on the theme tune at the moment. Thank you, Martin, for giving me a free theme tune. And let's get into the guest, Major Ed Dames from Sacramento, California. Ed, how are you?
I am better than you. Excellent, and better than you.
Better than me?
I'm better than you because I'm not ball and chained to a disc jockey millstone. I can move around and globetrot.
Well, you can.
You have a real job.
Hey, listen, that's debatable in radio, but the one thing about radio is, there was a television program called, I loved it, WKRP in Cincinnati. Do you remember that?
Howard, I have not watched television since I was 16. I don't like it.
All right. Well, I'm not the world's biggest fan of television these days. I think radio's far better. But this was about a comedy radio station, and they had a mad news director called Les Nessman, who'd won the Buckeye News Award. But anyway, that's by the by. The theme tune summed up what it's like to do radio, Ed. And it said, getting tired of packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the dial. And that is what it is. You know, before I arrived in London, I was town to town, up and down the dial, but always on air, always up and out of bed at 4 a.m. They always put me on breakfast, which is why late last year I took a break from it all, which I am still on, apart from little bits of training and the odd voiceover and this show that I'm doing, just to have a break from the 4 a.m. starts.
Bad karma, Howard. What did you do in the last life? Were you Vlad the Impaler?
I don't know. I think probably I went back to the Egyptian times. They probably, I don't know, they did the equivalent of crucifixion with me, I think. Ed, I must have done something. I have no idea what it was. But, hey, listen, it's very good to have you back on. Very much by request and on demand, we have to say. What I want to do, first of all, if it's all right with you, is just catch up with you. The last time we spoke to you personally, we're going to more or less live with your lovely lady in Ukraine, you know, coming towards Europe, to Ukraine. So what happened? Is everything okay?
Everything's okay. I have a home in Lugansk, on the near the Russian border, and in eastern Ukraine, and I bounce around the world from there.
And you were learning Russian?
Indeed.
So if I say Strasvuche?
I can say to you right now, Dobre utro.
That's very good. I don't know what that means, but it's very good.
Yes, yeah. Немного понимаю по-русски.
Understand
I'm
Russian?
I'm learning as fast as I can. I speak fluent Chinese and used to teach it, but this, I thought, oh man, a whole other language. Oh well.
How did a man who used to work for the U.S. Security Services, I'm very impressed that you speak Chinese. That is the language to have these days. But how come you didn't manage to learn Russian over the years?
Well, because I was a spy master. And the agents that I recruited to work for me, U.S. And allied agents, they spied for me, and they had to speak Russian. That was the primary reason, yeah. And then the other reason was I spied on the Russians through the back door, through China. So I used Chinese agents, and they never expected that. They didn't see that coming, so I was quite successful.
Well, in the era when you were part of that whole program, which, you know, a lot of my listeners to this, so we won't go into it too deeply, know about already, but when you were part of that, the great fear was that there was this axis of evil, that, you know, the Russians and the Chinese would one day get together and then all hell would break loose.
Well, if they do... and I know
which they still could, we have to say.
Prophecy has indicated that if they do, it'll be for a marriage of convenience. It won't be forever. But right now, what the heck? I'm sleeping with the enemy. And anyway, my first wife was Chinese. I have two sons that are half Chinese. Now I'm living with a Russian with one young stepson. I'm covered. Lex Luthor has nothing on me.
Wait, what people... Yes. Now, what people don't sometimes appreciate is that the world is getting smaller because of communications. I've talked about that before, and the ease of travel, as long as we can afford the airfares these days with the fuel prices going up. The world is getting smaller, and the one thing you do discover wherever you go in this world is that people more or less are people wherever you go. All right, they wear different clothes, and they speak a different language, and they might look a bit different to you, but the way people are is much the same wherever you go. Are you finding that while you're traveling?
I couldn't agree more. I know many, many Persians who have resettled in my country. They're wonderful people. All they want is to live their lives. It's their leaders who are madmen, and that does not just apply strictly to Persia. We see that in my own country as well. People are people. They just want to live their lives. But leadership, the power mongers in the world, we got to watch out for them.
Oh, it's true enough. We just had a change of leadership in London. We had a guy here who I think you're aware of. His name is Ken Livingstone, who was the mayor of London. Bit of an iconic figure of London. He was the first mayor of London. I followed him on the campaign trail for the very first elections, for the very first New York-style mayor in London. I covered the big... Oh, they had a great big show. That's all I can call it, show, to declare the results when Ken was elected. Now, Ken had got a long track record in London politics anyway because he defied Mrs. Thatcher. If you remember Mrs. Thatcher, our Prime Minister?
Oh, of course.
Ronnie Reagan's big friend. He had defied
her. Dragon queens of the century.
Totally. Well, totally. But actually being, like everybody in history, being a little bit rehabilitated these days, as tends to happen with politics and everything in life.
Well, the same with Mr. Gorbachev.
Well, you say with
Gorbachev. I equate Mr. Gorbachev and Margaret Thatcher.
Well,
in my own mind.
You know, and Ronald Reagan, they used to say, you know, the man is stupid, but you know, he wasn't all that stupid, and he was very well read, we now discover. And so it goes. But Ken Livingstone fought Thatcher, and then became the first London mayor, served a couple of terms, thought he was heading for his third, but has now been defeated. The Labour Party that he's reconciled with defeated in local elections, so he's out as mayor. And in comes a man who is very well educated, comes from the right side of the tracks, very definitely here in the UK, Boris Johnson, who's done a lot of entertainment shows on TV. He's still a very clever guy and a politician.
I'm cognizant of your new mayor, actually.
What do you think of him? Have you seen him?
No, not personally. Okay. Only on the internet. As I say, I don't watch television.
Yeah,
I keep apprised of current events internationally, and this should be fun, like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
You think so? That's very English.
I think you needed a change, and I think this is the right one.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people agree with that. You know, he won, and now he's made a lot of promises, and Boris has got to deliver. And I think you're right. I think London was probably in need of a big change. It's been going in one direction. It's been getting stale for a few years, arguably.
Stoic, stuffed shirt,
yeah.
Morose, lugubrious.
A lot of people are knuckling down, as we say here in the UK, and doing their jobs and not really seeing the bigger picture, which is what I want to get into now. We've had a long talk about all sorts of stuff. Let's get into the remote viewing. First of all, for those who are new to this, can you explain to me in terms better than I could explain what is remote viewing?
I probably can. It's a systematic clairvoyance, systematic ESP. And it's taking a natural and innate faculty that all of us are apparently born with and turning it into a skill.
Okay.
Very rigorous, very disciplined. Think of music or language. If you did not have a structure for music or language, you could still get along playing or humming or communicating that way and attempting to communicate in grunts and whistles. But with a language, whether it's Chinese or English or German, and with a syntax and grammar that music notes, written music has, you're able to communicate much more effectively. Well, what we discovered in our business was how the syntax and grammar, if you will, for how unconscious communicates very effectively with conscious awareness.
So in simple terms, what that means to ordinary people on the street is that they can quite often think that they know what somebody else is thinking or about to do or will do or has done, and they can have an idea of that. But what you do is train people to do that properly.
We train it into a skill. If you could, if you're a natural runner or a natural basketball player, but any natural ability, that's analogous to what we do. We take your natural psychic ability and we turn it into a very rigorous, highly disciplined skill.
I think I'm probably right in saying this, more than all the things that I've talked about on this show when it was on the radio, now that it's on the internet. Remote viewing is the thing that fascinates me most, and the reason for it, I think, and I've racked my head to come up with a reason for it, and the reason for it is that I have had those feelings of knowing what somebody is going to do, or knowing what somebody or, you know, some organization has done, whatever. And it makes sense from that standpoint. It makes sense that, yes, we do have that ability.
Well, make sure, though, what we do is take people like you and train the ability so that the next time you engage in that kind of thinking, you know it's wrong. The only way that you can know that it's right is attend to very rigorous standardized protocols.
Well, is it only wrong when you act on information that you've got when you're not properly trained to get that information and it may be incorrect? Is it only wrong then?
We cannot. As professionals, we know that we can never trust our thinking brain when we're not in what we call structure. You have to actually go through the steps to know that you're right, because we're so want to bring closure to these ideas that pop into our minds. We're so want to analyze, and all of that is not direct knowledge. It's imagination for all intents and purposes. We're not allowed to think while we work. There's no thinking allowed. It's think of playing the piano. You don't think when you play the piano. You play the next note and the next note and the next note. That's what we do during the process of remote viewing. It's a three-part process. That's the skill itself. It's not difficult to teach.
So what are the three?
But there are two other parts to it.
Okay. Well, how would you sum up the three parts? I presume part one is getting your head into the state where you can do this.
No. The protocols do that themselves. For instance, if you were a pianist and you were to sit down and play a piece, it doesn't matter where your head is. You could have had an argument with your mate, be grieving, whatever, but if you're going to play that piece, the piece takes you into the proper state itself, very similar to the remote viewing protocols. That's the first part, however, is to know what piece you're going to play exactly, and you need written notes to do that. So we need to know exactly how to direct our unconscious mind to a target, a person, place, a thing, or event. We need to understand how to do that. Then we play the piano. We played the piece. When the piece is over, we analyze the results. But that's just an analogy. In our work, we collect jigsaw piece puzzles as we go through. And then at the end of the session, a remote viewing session is perhaps 45 minutes, 2 hours, we put these pieces together and look for a pattern.
Okay, now I found some of your video material. I don't know whether it's supposed to be there on YouTube last week, and I thought it was extremely well produced. But the one thing that interests me is that you've just used, in the last 2 minutes or so you've been talking, the word "we" an awful lot. And the material I saw on the net was exactly that. It was you and a team of other people working almost collectively, like a hive, on a subject. Does it work best that way?
Negative. I have my own intelligence agency. I got fed up with the agencies that I work for, the Office of the Secretary of Defense. I work for Colin Powell, the Defense Intelligence Agency, CIA. I formed my own intelligence agency, the Matrix Intelligence Agency. I have in that agency two teams, an A team and a B team. The B team are my newest members. They require at least 1 year of experience in the field, plus 120 hours of professional instruction by me, one-on-one. My A team has each of them has at least 8 years of experience in remote viewing. for every project, I know that you're interested in Madeleine McCann, and we just picked that project
sure.
up.
Sure, and I want to get to that.
I'm only going to use six people okay. for my A and B team, because anything above and beyond that is overkill. We don't need more than that many people on any given project.
So there's an optimal size for the team, but it is a team nevertheless. It's the right team.
We can tackle anything. We're right now we're monitoring a nuclear terrorist threat, which is something I know, having been at celestial levels of intelligence in the U.S. and working with my counterparts in MI5 and 6, it's hit and miss. We're not going to be able to stop the sum of all fears unless we have that really precision remote viewing, which we now have.
All right, I want to get to the Madeleine McCann case, and thank you for mentioning that, because it is, as I record these words on a Sunday morning, it's precisely a year since that dear, poor little girl went missing. We don't know what happened to her. I want to get to that in a little while, and the nuclear threat that you're dealing with. I'd like, if it's okay with you, Ed, to just do a little bit of housekeeping here. One or two things that we talked about the last time we spoke, which was almost a year ago. And if this is okay, the first one was you were locating a strong box, a box full of gold that had been stolen by some bandit, Black Pete or something like that in the United States.
Black Bart.
Black Bart, exactly, in the United States. Did you locate it? Do you have the money?
We'll have the money next week. Actually, you have to convert all that into greenbacks or pounds, depending on what you want.
Hold on,
We're continuing our gold projects. Mm-hmm. So we have two classes of gold projects. We have natural gold, which is gold veins and uh-huh. what we call potato patches, areas in Western America uh-huh. where there are nuggets on the ground. Okay, mm-hmm. And then we have man-made treasure targets, fabricated targets.
So you found this thing. That's the important thing. You found this thing. You've got the gold, and you're now converting it into dollars, into cash, hard cash.
But what you'll see when we show this to the public, you'll see the gold and you'll see the nuggets. But that's about all you see, because if for instance, let me give you a hypothetical situation. If Black Bart robbed a Wells Fargo stagecoach, Wells Fargo is an extant bank. It exists today. And even though the robbery may have been more than 100 years ago, it's still Wells Fargo loot.
Oh, no.
So we have to be careful about the connectivity, if you know what I mean. We can show you the gold. Nuggets aren't a problem, or a gold vein. But if it happens to be fabricated, somebody's going to come forward and claim it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we have to be careful about our photos.
So listen, a lot of people, Ed, and you know this. I'm not telling you this for the first time. I'm a big fan of what you do. You know that. But there are a lot of people, some of them email me, a lot of them have their say on American radio, who don't believe in what you do, who frankly don't like you. The one thing I said... one of the things I said at the top of that, I know you care about that, but one of the things that I said at the top of this show is that I think you have... It's like a kind of magnetism that some broadcasters have. People like Howard Stern. There are people who hate Howard Stern, people who love Howard Stern. I love him. You know, I think I know where he's coming from. But there are people who hate him and the people who love him. What is the one thing that those people have in common? They all listen to him. So these people who deride you, still, I bet they're listening to this now. They have to listen to what you've got to say.
I don't have to be politically correct. I do not have to be politically correct. That's not my job. And if I tell people what's coming over the horizon, and it's not very nice, I'm the messenger that they want to shoot.
We talked last time, and again, I keep saying this, we're going to get into this when we talk about current subjects, but we talked about problems with the economy and how there were vested interests where if you said a particular thing that was detrimental to a very large business, it may not be very good for the stock price of that business. Do you ever worry that, you know, one of these days, if you say something that is detrimental to a particular business or a sector, that somebody's going to get you for it?
No. I'm only worried about in terms of what I do as a civilian in the military. When I was a spy in the spy espionage business, I was backstopped. But now I'm not backstopped. I'm on my own. So I worry about if I were to provide intelligence on, let's say, the drug cartels, the Cali cartel or something like that, then I would be doing something stupid, as well as the Russian mafia.
Well,
so
yes.
I avoid sectors like that, and I'm sure you understand.
So you have some limits.
The limitations are just common sense.
Mm. Well, I don't blame you for that at all, for all the reasons that you can imagine, some of which played out on the streets of London. The Steve Fossett case, adventurer Steve Fossett, you sent me a map of the location where the remains of Steve Fossett and his plane were supposedly. What happened about that?
Well, there's still heavy snow in the Sierras. In fact, in Sacramento, here where I live now, I can look east and see the snow in the Sierras. But I have a pinpoint on his location, and I've decided that because, well, the search was called off because of the winter originally. And they were searching Nevada. They spent a lot of resources searching Nevada. I tried to tell the powers that be that Steve Fossett went down in the Sierra Nevadas. But I'm not going to wait for them to catch up with me. So in June, when the snow does finally melt and he is not covered, I'm taking my own team in and myself. I won't recover him. I'll stand next to him, take pictures, and call in the troops.
There are two things that will actually get you an awful lot of, hopefully, mainstream media exposure that you haven't had in huge amounts in recent times anyway. But there are two things: the strong box full of money and Steve Fossett. We hope that he might have survived and be fending
no, no,
a life
no,
himself.
Course.
There's no chance of that.
You're aware that no one else, no. 4 days after he disappeared, except me, said that he was dead. Everybody expected him to walk out of wherever he was.
But obviously, after this length of time, there is no chance, and that's just a sad fact.
But 4 days, 96 hours after he disappeared,
that's true.
My team had ascertained that he was dead. And the one down in Sierra Nevada. It's not Nevada.
So there are two things that could get you an awful lot of publicity. Are you ready for that?
Oh, in the past, the publicity and its makers are fickle. And we're quite aware of that. We're not fickle. We're professionals. So we really don't care about the publicity. We care about succeeding, getting the mission accomplished. It happens to be that because we're not top secret anymore, we're in the public eye. And that's the only difference, Howard.
The one thing that would have got you global exposure everywhere, even in the tabloid newspapers in Britain, well, I suppose especially in the tabloid newspapers in Britain, actually, when you come to think of it, was your expedition to find, not E.T., but some kind of external agency, which is how you describe it, and set up a command post, I think two of them, in two different places, to contact this extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional, whatever it was, agency. And you were going to do that last July.
It's done, but I will tell you right now, the public is not ready for this, nor will it be for quite a while. It's beyond anything that I anticipated.
Well, my friends in places like Africa who do channeling tell me that the message that is going to be hard to digest is that, as a race, as a planet, we don't have an awful lot of time, and life as we know it, the days of that are numbered. Is that what you found out?
That is essentially one of the things, yes.
Okay.
The public may be ready for that, but it's not ready for other things.
When will the public be ready? When it happens?
No, the public will be ready after it happens and after the dust clears, which will leave much less public.
Well, listen, I know that when you don't want to talk about a thing, you cannot be prized into talking about it, so I'm not going to push you too much on it, but safe to say, did the intelligence tell you what we have to do, assuming that we are still around, or some of us are still around, what we have to do after whatever events transpire?
There's nothing that we can do to prevent anything that transpires. Individually, you can save yourself and your family, but holistically, no. And afterwards, we don't have to do anything. We'll have another... we'll have helpers here to help us rebuild the planet, so... It's a fait accompli. Just hang in there, enjoy the ride.
I spend a lot of time worrying about my future, as many of us do, Ed. Are you suggesting that I should start worrying?
Very much so.
God. Time scale?
4 years, five at the most.
Okay. So it's time to do, which by doing what I'm doing right now is partly that, time to do the things you always wanted to do, maybe.
That, and if you want to continue, if you want to survive what's coming, you need to learn remote viewing and understand where we call these places sanctuaries. In fact, I actually have done contract work for individuals in the UK and pointed them to places where they need to be 4 or 5 years from now.
I know of some people who are part of, I can't say too much about it, and you know, I've always been intrigued by it, but there are people who are making emergency plans and have been making emergency plans that would shock people for some time.
Yeah, not good enough, though. You actually need to know. You actually have to lean toward the global mind and via your own unconscious, have your own unconscious point you to where the places that are eminently survivable for you. And you cannot suss this out necessarily or think it out. You can't analyze it. Because you can't see over the horizon like your unconscious can. So we avail ourselves of our unconscious and the global mind, of which that is a part, to point us in the right direction.
How certain are you, I think I asked you a question like this last time, so I'm sorry, but how certain of you are you that all of this is going to happen down the track?
I'm absolutely certain. It's 100%.
Within 4 years?
We've seen it too long. We've been seeing it for 20 years, 15 years. The global economic collapse we've seen for 12 years coming, and I've been talking about that. But these other things that we've called, as you know, the kill shot, more than 15 years.
Well, the kill shot, you have been absolutely consistent about. You are consistent. That's the one thing that I have noted, because I have been listening to you for probably 10 years on radio now, one way and another. You've been consistent.
Well, that's the definition of insanity, isn't it?
Why do you think I'm where I am now? The kill shot is the one thing that you've been absolutely 100% consistent about all the way through those years that I've heard you. You've always mentioned it, the kill shot being the giant collection of, or single, I don't know whether it was single or collection, of solar flares.
It's the next, the next solar max. So we've already seen a precursor, which was an X-45 plus that thankfully was not aimed our way. But that's what we foresaw as a shot across the bow, which would be a precursor to a series of very, very serious events which will occur in this solar max, which started, of course, as you know, in January.
And all we have to do, and we said that last time, we can amplify on it now, all we have to do here sitting in our little homes, you know, as I'm staring out over the park here in London, we just got to wait for it, because there ain't nothing we can do about it.
There is. You'll need a place to be underground for about in and out of 2 weeks because of the heat and also the high winds that will occur, possibly as much as 300 miles an hour in some belts on the planet Earth. Those 2 weeks will be hell for most of the people on Earth.
Now, whenever I did, as in my days as a newsman at Morning Drive in London, all those years of getting up at 4 a.m. and doing this, I would love to do stories on the news because I thought they were important and people should hear them. Those stories about meteorite on course with Earth or whatever, and is it going to hit, is it going to pass us by? And people would phone me up and they would say, I have small children, you've alarmed us, you know, we're all scared on the school drive in the morning, you're a very irresponsible man and you should know better than that, and I'm going to complain to your boss. What do you think when you say things like you have just said, and you know that people are going to say to you, how irresponsible?
Well, I mean, my nom de guerre that Dennis was on my briefing tours in the White House was Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom.
I want people to be scared, because if you scare them enough, they may actually act and may actually do something that would save their children, perhaps themselves, and their grandchildren from something very big that's coming. So I want them to be scared. I want them to have nightmares. I want them to be frightened to the point where they act. That way, maybe I can save some lives.
Let's get to the economy. I want to talk about very current stuff now, stuff that is absolutely right now. We talked a lot last time round about stuff that didn't really seem real to me at the time. There were the early signs of it, but it didn't seem real because life was just going along hunky-dory, both sides of the Atlantic, London doing very nicely, property prices like my little apartment here going up and up and up, and life, the cost of living not being that expensive. Well, hell, 1 year down the track, some of the stuff that you said would happen has begun to happen. We had the subprime crisis in America impacting house prices now here in the UK. A lot of bad loans, a lot of foreclosures going on, even here in the UK. Food prices going up because there are so many people in these new economies like China and India demanding more food. Gasoline prices going up, petrol prices, as we say here in the UK, going up because not enough supply and too much demand. And the tremendous clamour for resources now by countries like China, who seem to make, you know, a lot of the world's goods and items. So, you know, here we have an economy problem that I don't think a year ago we fully had a grip on, but you seem to.
Well, that's the beauty of remote viewing. I'm not easily entertained. I would not have stayed in this business for a quarter of a century had I not been, and still am, in awe of what it can do. 11, 12 years ago, we looked over the horizon using our techniques and methods and saw, and I've been saying it for 12 years, a global economic collapse, period. And those terms have been used by Paul Volcker and many other world's financial leaders only in the last year. But remote viewing can see that coming a long way ahead. So now what we did, knowing that it's now here, it's arrived. So what we did was produce a DVD called Financial Market Futures. So we said, okay, now you know what the problem is. Here's a way to gain real advantage of this, to know what to do now in terms of investment, where to invest, how to invest, in terms of 100% certainty, because that's the name of the game as far as remote viewing is concerned. We're not interested in making mistakes. So we've got DVDs, yes. Viewing the Future, for instance, is a DVD that we produced showing the things that are coming. But in terms of where the rubber meets the road, right down here in the day-to-day existence, paying the bills, we show people in the Financial Markets DVD how to use remote viewing to leverage everything they do financially. And so we're trying to provide solutions, not Dr. Doom is trying to provide some solutions, not just problems. But there's one more thing you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
The one more thing that we've been seeing that not only aggravates the financial global economic collapse, which is on us now, is really just beginning. There's something else that we're on the cusp of, which will really deliver the coup de grace to global economic markets, and that's disease. I am telling you, like I've been saying for the last 12 years, disease is going to ravage us to the point where it will take down all markets, and the disease is bird flu.
That is not a fashionable thing to say at the moment, because a lot of people now believe, a lot of people in the media who talked it up a year, 2 years ago, now believe it's gone away.
No, it has not gone away. It's logarithmically. I mean, the smart people out there are watching this, but you and I are, you know, looking at the news and looking at current events and living day to day. We don't know this, what's going on with microorganisms worldwide. Microbes are going to ravage us far more than economic ravages could ever do.
We're talking
a global pandemic.
Well, it might
right on the heels of a global economic collapse.
Really? And again, that word timescale. When do we see this?
Now it's happening now. You just haven't been watching. Take a look at if you're not familiar with epidemiology, and you're not familiar with plant pathology, because at the same time we're about to get ravaged worldwide by a global pandemic, our crops are going to die. Not only is food supply in short, but guess what? It's the immune system of plants is now also suppressed for various reasons, technical reasons I don't want to get into. And now because it's suppressed, this thing that I talked about, this particular fungi that will kill grasses worldwide because of a mutation, this fungi I talked about 7 years ago, UG99 is what it's called now. will destroy grasses worldwide. So while we have a financial, global economic collapse, we have disease ravaging mammals, including man, and we have this mutated fungi ravaging grasses that we eat worldwide.
Got it. That's
so
a triple whammy.
For, I mean, we are in for a real wild ride here, and then the kill shot. So this is
interesting to be
alive
whammy.
In these times.
Quadruple whammy. Do our politicians, Gordon Brown is looking like a very worried man at the moment, our Prime Minister, not just because his party's not doing very well, electorally or in the opinion polls, but do our politicians like him, like Bush, do they know this? And are they not telling?
No.
For reasons of their own?
They could know. And they could know, but they actually have they don't have enough time to pay attention to this. They're too involved in serious, power mongering. Period. That's their we're capacity constrained in how much we can process at any given time, and they're processing their own future, their own status quo, which is really a status quo pro ante.
So apart from prepare our underground survival space for 2 weeks at least, and if we survive all of this, there's not a whole lot we can do. The economy is going to go the way that the economy will go, unless there'll be one or two people who perhaps use smart investments and remote viewing to make a few bob, as we say here in London, a few dollars. But for the rest of us, we're going down the tubes.
It doesn't have to be underground for all belts, for all places. It just needs to be a protected area. Some places it does need to be underground, depending on where you are geographically. But other places, the most important thing is water, the fresh water supplies, food, of course, protection from winds if you're in a canyon or somewhere where you can, behind rocks or something like that, where you can actually be protected from very high winds. And most importantly, if you're around like-minded people who are not going to kill your family for food, those kinds of things, that's what I'm talking about. That's very important, people that support each other. And in the big cities, as well as I do, there are only a couple of cities in the world where people are actually human and will not turn barbaric overnight.
Well, sometimes I look at London and it looks so ordered most of the time, and I wonder if something like that happened, and you say it is, how would we react? That's the thing.
Well, you only have about 3 days' food supply in the store, so you have to ask yourself, when that's gone and stays gone, what's going to happen? I don't need to paint that picture for you.
During World War II, all the documentaries and the famous movies show you this. There was this thing that Britain had. There was a great wartime spirit here, and people sheltered Hitler's bombs by going in the underground system, the subway system here. Mm-hmm. They'd sleep there overnight. Is that a way to survive this here in London?
Yes.
Okay. That's only for a limited number of people, though. Not everybody can get down there.
Correct.
And for the rest of us, those of us who are, 15 miles, 25 kilometers outside London, what do we do?
You can drop your drawers, bend over, and kiss your derriere goodbye.
I had a feeling you might say that at some point in our conversation, Ed, and that's it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Realistically...
Yes, it is.
Realistically, I'm thinking about this now, and I'm just thinking, okay, well, I've been a fairly, I've rolled with the punches in my lifetime, and I'm going to have to do that again, just see what happens, bring it on. And I might come out of it, and I might not. That's how I'm viewing it.
There are actually some sanctuaries in the British Isles and not too far away. But if I were to tell you where these sanctuaries are, then ne'er-do-wells would go there and actually ruin them. So it's a catch-22 situation.
When you say there are sanctuaries, are these... I've seen one bunker in the UK that is an official sort of government place where important people will go and speak to the nation on radio and say, do not panic and that kind of stuff. But these government
things... What I'm
talking
about are places where the populations, which are small populations, take care of each other.
Okay. So these people are preparing now?
No, they're not. They're not. But they just serendipitously, they're in a position where when this occurs, they will take care of each other, like Londoners did during the Blitzkrieg.
Okay, what that suggests to me is it's the small communities. It's places like the Scilly Islands, which are off the southwest of England, or the Outer Hebrides up off Scotland.
You're so warm, you're hot. Uh-huh.
And the Channel Islands, you know, where people pulled together in the war. You know, the Channel Islands, which are just off France, but they're British, were taken over by Hitler for a period during the war, and people there pulled together. So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah? Yes, you're correct. Yeah, you're very perspicacious.
And what about all this stuff that we are seeing? I mean, this is, you know, I haven't, it's a Sunday that I'm talking to you now. I haven't bought the Sunday newspapers here, but I can guarantee you, apart from all the political stuff that'll be in the papers, all this stuff about food, gasoline prices, resources, bad debts, the papers are going to be full of it. What about that?
Oh, the attention won't be on that soon, because the Israelis will bomb Iran. And on the North Korean Peninsula, there'll be the first use of a nuclear weapon in anger soon. So people, the press, of course, will run toward those two in those two directions.
Not just you. Other people have been talking about this Korean situation, the first use of a tactical nuclear missile in anger. You know, will be.
It won't be a missile, and it won't be tactical.
Okay.
The North Koreans do not. It will be on the part of the North Koreans, and they do not have those delivery means yet.
When you say on the part of the North Koreans, it's them directly or some other agency that they.
No, it's them directly.
Them directly. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the nuclear situation that you were talking about at the top of this show? You said there was a terrorism situation.
No, it's not connected. It's not. No, I'm talking about nuclear terrorism. This over there is war, and an act of war. I'm very much concerned with monitoring and tracking nuclear terrorists, which is what we're doing.
Well, let's get to that in a second. But the Korean thing, a lot of people have been saying that there was going to be something nuclear happening there, and it didn't happen, and a number of deadlines passed, I seem to remember, with other people, not yourself, saying, oh, yes, it is going to happen, and then things seem to improve. The communist Koreans seem to be getting on better with the rest of the world these days.
It doesn't matter. 20 years ago, we saw this coming, a full 20 years ago, the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger would be on the Korean Peninsula by the North Koreans, and all of the things, the intervening stuff, does not matter. In our work, we can see, if we direct our unconscious mind to a specific topic or subject, we can discern the answer to that particular question. But it's very difficult for us, as you know, to adjudge distance. Think of, we don't have the parallax. We can see that big mountain in the distance that we're looking at for, but we can't adjudge how far it is. It's certainly prominent, and it's the next mountain, but we can't see how far it is. Analogously, we can see the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger if that's what we're looking for as trained remote viewers, but we can't adjudge the distance. 20 years ago, we couldn't do that.
And can you see what the rest of the world, notably the United States, will do about it?
We could if we explored the situation, but there's life is short and there's just too many things to do. There's too many things to look at.
Do people bombard you? I'm sure they must, because your website's very successful. LearnRV.com is one of them, isn't it? But do people bombard you with requests to do things for them?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
And what do you tell them?
Well, I have a soft spot for missing endangered children. That's my soft spot. That's the most difficult one to turn down, and I rarely, if ever, do that. So the rest of the things I can, the rest of the request, I can turn them down, because we're really saturated in terms of work. But that's my one weak spot. That's why I decided to take a look at the Maddie McCann.
Okay, now you know that I do this show as live. Even though it's recorded, we do it unedited, as live, and I adhere as far as possible, and this is the internet where there are no rules, but I adhere to radio protocols. So when you talk about Maddie McCann in this country, oh boy, it's very difficult because everybody has a view on it. But you've looked into the Madeleine McCann case. This little girl vanished as her parents dined at a little restaurant in Portugal. They were on holiday. Their apartment was literally just not even a stone's throw away, you could see it. And within the space of no time at all, they were just having their meal. They could see by line of sight their apartment. This little girl disappeared, and everybody's got a theory about what happened. What do you think happened?
We don't think and we don't deal in theories.
What do you think that you know?
We collect information, and it's direct knowledge. So there's no thinking involved. There's no theorization involved. It's strictly raw intelligence, raw information, we convert that into intelligence, and it's always correct. We're not psychics. We can run rings around the best psychics in the world.
Okay.
Maddie's alive. That's all I can tell you at this moment. We're not asking people to believe us, and that's about it.
Have you told anybody else yet what you're telling me?
No.
Are you going to?
Yes. Just that, though. Just that.
Are you putting that on your website?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, I don't know. I felt, as we all have in this country, for the McCann family, and I hope you're right. That's all. I hope that you're
right. Doesn't
matter
whether I'm right or not. All that matters is to bring this kid home. That's all that matters.
Let's get to something else. There are conspiracy theorists in this world. There is one in America who's got a radio show. You know who I'm talking about, I think. And he's got a great multimedia empire. And a lot of it is talking about 9/11 and how the fact that 9/11, he's still talking about it. He's talking about it this last week. 9/11 did not happen in the way that we thought it happened. It was a false flag operation, is what they call it. In other words, it was staged. It was staged. You've looked at 9/11. What do you think of all?
You haven't? I have not looked at it.
Okay. I always thought you had. That's
no, negative. I have not. I don't want to look at it because I don't want to know if it was a false flag operation. It hurt me enough to look at the Kennedy assassination. I never believed, as a younger man, that my government could ever be implicated in an assassination. But indeed, when I found out that was using remote viewing, that was indeed the case, it took me a day to get over it. And now, that's the reason I don't want to look at 9/11, because one of my sons is saying this too, and many other people have collected information which they feel supports what you're saying, that theory of a false flag operation. I don't want to look. I don't want to know that it is.
Well, two things that didn't really add up for me. I saw all the coverage on the day itself. I had to, because I was working in news, and I needed to know what was going on. So there I had CNN and all the other outlets on. A lot of the stuff that was seen on that day was never seen again. That struck me as being suspicious, maybe. That hung around in my head for a long time. But the other thing being, you know, where's the plane that went into the Pentagon? Where's the wreckage? Where are the pictures of the plane?
I understand.
Where
I
are the pictures
understand.
Of the plane? And that is something. Would you ever feel that maybe a specific aspect of 9/11 you could remote view on, like that?
Of course. We could crack that, of course. That's a very, very easy thing for us to look at. I'd rather be an ostrich and stick my head in the sand than look at this, because I don't want to know. What am I going to do about it, Howard? What am I going to do about it? Seriously. If I find out and say, well, okay, my government orchestrated this, or somebody close to the government did, what do I do about it? I'm a man of action. I want to be able to take the information that we work so hard to derive and do something about it.
And, of course, if you get involved in the totality, we're not talking about one specific part of it, like the plane that went into the Pentagon or whatever. But if you talk about the totality of it and you take a view on it, you instantly put yourself where all the conspiracy theorists are, and you know how many rotten eggs brickbats are being thrown at them.
No, excuse me for interrupting, but it's more than that. If I, as the operations and training officer of this country's Psi spy unit for many years, and stepping down from the celestial levels of intelligence as a U.S. targeting officer to take control of those jobs, if I say it was a conspiracy theory, then I might as well be remote viewing the Cali cartel's Latin America drug transshipment point, if you get the gist.
Yeah, I do entirely. All right, we're at the end of it now.
Mama didn't raise no fool.
That's clear. We're at the end of it now. I want to try and lighten it up a little,
hard. Really? You're asking Dr. Doom to lighten your show up.
I know. I've asked you that before, and we know where that ended up. But the only way I can try and get a little bit of solace for this Sunday that I'm recording this on, in amidst all the stuff that's coming down the track to us, How do you think I, or anybody listening to this now, could use RV, remote viewing, to improve our lives in the short term?
I think in the short term, one of the most practical things is health and longevity. Remote viewing is great for looking at one's personal health and longevity, what one is doing wrong, what one is doing right, and how to ameliorate anything that's wrong or mitigate conditions that exist. That's a very big thing that we use in remote viewing. The other is investments, because you know that's a very practical thing. We're all trying to pay bills. And using it, that's why we produced that financial markets DVD, because I had talked about all the problems and people wanted to know what to do. But this is how you use RV to show you which stocks to buy and when to sell, how to operate in the futures market, what long-term and short-term investments are, considering what's coming, are copacetic, those kinds of things.
Okay. Well, that just kind of pushes learning remote viewing up the agenda for me, because I've wanted to do it for years and I never had the time. But I would like to do it.
I'll coach you. I'm every day for free. I'm online in the forums teaching students who have used my DVDs to learn, and I make sure that they learn it well and learn higher skills. I'm there, and it's free. I'm there every day. That's what I do for a living.
Do you think I might be able to use it to know what the bosses of radio stations are going to do, Ed?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I have my own personal ethics. I don't believe that just because I have the ability to do something, I have the license or the right to use it. So I don't really look in other people's minds except for terrorists and child abductors, which may be, you know, in terms of that may be bending the rules, and that may be hypocritical. But I don't teach ethics. You can do whatever you want with it.
That's a good point to leave it. Anybody wants to know about RV and about you, what do they do? Where do they go?
LearnRV.com.
Ed Dames, it's a pleasure to talk to you as usual. I always feel a little chilled after I've talked to you, because it is sobering stuff, as we say on this side of the Atlantic. I must stop saying that, but it is sobering stuff. And some of it, there's nothing we can do about. All we can do is be as vigilant, I guess, as you can be.
Sleep well.
Yeah, I'll try. Ed Dames, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Howard.
My name is Howard Hughes. This is The Unexplained. Thank you very much for being part of the show. Thank you for all the emails. Keep them coming. Go to www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. If you missed the details about Ed, they will be there. And thank you to my webmaster, Graham Mullins, for doing that, for making that happen. Thank you to Mart. Mart. Thank you to Mart for the terrific theme tune, which we are continuing to use and which he is working on an improved version of now as I speak. I understand. The Unexplained with Howard Hughes will return very soon. Again, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.